You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.
You know what we're going to talk about for the open? It's that, can I do this podcast while writing my blog? Can I be attentive enough to what Jeff is saying? Will I rewrite this? Because every time we try to do something here, big news drops.
Kelly McCrimmon, there's no reason doing what ifs and hypotheticals. The events that have taken place, and that's where we are today. Today, a first on the podcast. Today, an experiment on the podcast. As we record this, it is 12:45 p.m. Wednesday afternoon. Time is tight for both Elliot and myself. With a number of pre-tapes and the Montreal-Chicago game tonight on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. And Elliot has yet to finish the 31 Thoughts blog. So today's experiment, as the podcast is recorded, the challenge to Elliot is, can he do two things at the same time? Finish a podcast and finish a column. Let's find out.
I don't like my odds.
So if you hear that,
what does Odd Shark say about
the sound of furious typing in the background and long pauses between my musings and questions and Elliot's answers and how many times he says, although this won't appear on the podcast, can we pick that up? Can we go back? What did you say again?
You know what? Almost going to embarrass me one of these days, and this could be the one, because he's getting kind of growly at my lack of attention span.
Yeah.
Oh, look, something shiny.
Today's title of the podcast will be Cats and Laser Pointers. And the first topic du jour on cats and laser pointers is the Vegas Golden Knights. And thankfully, selfishly, this was done before the podcast was recorded, so we don't have to stick around tonight after the game to do an insert. Gerard Gallant is out. Peter DeBoer is in. Gerard Gallant, whose record over three seasons with the Vegas Golden Knights is 118 wins, 75-20. 118, 75, and 20 with the Vegas Golden Knights. We saw them lose Tuesday night to the Buffalo Sabres, and that was it. Before we get to what this means for Peter DeBoer now, your thoughts on Gerard Gallant. 3 points out of first in the Pacific, out of a job.
So there was a rumor going around that Gallant was about to sign an extension. I actually got a phone call from a coach who was really upset about Gallant getting fired because he was apparently very close to an extension. I mean, unfortunately, that's kind of the, you know what you're getting into going into it. You're hired to be fired. It's a volatile business. The one thing that makes it more worthwhile, Jeff, is that coaches' salaries have exploded so much in the last few years that it makes it easier on you. But, you know, I was telling CJ, I think about a week ago, that I think for next week I'm going to try to work on whether or not Gallant's getting an extension. And we didn't even get to Saturday, and he's gone on Wednesday. But to me, that's the most surprising thing about all of this, is how quickly it changed. Here were the Vegas Golden Knights, who have this coach who takes them on one of the greatest NHL seasons ever. Then they lose in one of the craziest NHL ways ever.
Yep.
And, you know, what I heard was he had a 3-year deal, but his fourth year became guaranteed when they went to the final. And now, so next year is going into year four. You don't want the lame duck coach. You're working on an extension. And the next thing you know, he's gone. Like, that's the craziest thing about it for me. Now, I will tell you, another coach who knows Gallant well said that he noticed that Gallant looked more and more frustrated. Like, as the team struggled, and Vegas should be better than they are. They're having, like, to me, that's the team that on paper should be leading the Pacific Division. Mm-hmm. And they're right now this year, they're less than the sum of their parts. And he could see Gallant's frustration on the bench, in his media interviews. He could see this really coming. But when you're talking extension and all of a sudden, days later, they're gone, mm-hmm. I mean, that is one extreme to another.
See, I have a hard time believing that it's just this four-game losing streak that they're on. And sure, should they beat the Buffalo Sabres on a Tuesday night at KeyBank? Yeah, that's the Vegas Golden Knights that we've all become accustomed to. But this is a team that exceeded expectations right out of the gate.
Yes.
This is the expansion team that went to the Stanley Cup final. That was, and probably should not be, an expectation for this squad in years 2, 3, 4, and maybe 5 as well. But the expectation there, as we all know, is high. Mm-hmm. I would submit.
Demanding owner.
And I would submit unrealistically high.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is a firing based on, well, we went to the Stanley Cup final 2 years ago, I kind of look at this one sideways
mm-hmm.
and say, how good do you think this team is? And do you realize that there are 30 other teams with the exact same amount of cap space trying to do the same thing?
I just think that it says to me that you're right. This is an organization that demands a lot. And maybe that first year set the bar unnecessarily high. I think the owner is, as I said before, is very demanding. I think he's very involved. You know, if you look at George McPhee's history, he's also a guy who's been not have been afraid to change coaches. Actually, I got to tell you, initially when I heard it, before I saw DeBoer, I was kind of wondering, is there any chance Kelly McCrimmon's going to coach the team himself?
Coach GM.
You know, you still got McPhee there, right?
Sure.
I kind of wondered if he would consider going behind the bench. Obviously, he didn't. But, you know, I think there's a lot of people in that organization with a lot of strong opinions and probably strong opinions about coaching.
Gerard Gallant.
Yeah.
Before we get to what's next.
Also, yes. Has he not been fired in the weirdest ways?
Well, Carolina was bizarre and then called himself his own cab. And
look, that you know, was, I'll tell you that story. So that he was Florida
the
in Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah.
So their travel guy was getting destroyed because of the way that story played out. I'll always remember this about Gerard Gallant.
He called his own cab. He called, that was
well,
his
he
choice.
Called me 2 days later and said, I need you to do me a favor. Only twice has Gerard Gallant ever called me and asked me to do him a favor. The first time was that time. He says, I need you to do me a favor. Our travel guy in Florida is getting destroyed for this story about the cab. I'm worried he's going to get fired. Can you do me a favor? This is what actually happened. Can you write it to take the heat off him?
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was a great thing to do, which he'd get fired. The second time he ever called me to do anything was 2 weeks ago when he called about the rink in PEI, the one he grew up skating on
yeah.
that was burned down. And he said, is there any way you can do anything on Hockey Night in Canada for it? And we did. We showed the photos and headlines, and we talked about how they want hometown hockey to come there next year.
Other communities supporting the teams and giving them ice.
You know,
and
I think that says a lot about him as a person, is that do you try to use the media? Yes, I tried to use the media twice, but they're in ways that, you know, help out other people.
Help other people and help himself. I don't know that he'll need any favors to get another job.
No.
I don't think he'll be calling saying, Elliot, it's a little quiet around my name. Can you heat things up and throw me in 31 thoughts? Because Gerard Gallant, much like you said about Peter DeBoer, is still a desired coach around the NHL. There has been interest previous in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
There is some belief that there was something already close to being done or maybe done before Ken Hitchcock was hired there. This is probably someone that, again, much like we said about Peter DeBoer, won't be unemployed long if he doesn't want to be. There's a lot of coaches on interim, have interim tags right now. Should they be nervous now that here's another crocodile in the water?
Well, I think so. I mean, has there ever been as much coaching talent on the sidelines as there is right now?
No.
Coaching talent that appears to want to coach?
No.
Laviolette's still there. He's a turnaround master. Gallant's still there. What do we know about Gallant? Dallas wanted to hire him.
Yep.
Didn't. Seattle's there. He's got a long history with Steve Yzerman. Now, that's a big job. If Steve Yzerman makes a change, that's a big job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if Gerard Gallant is wired to do that job.
That is a lot of heavy lifting.
Yes.
For a long time. Seattle is interesting because he's done it before with Vegas.
Yeah, but I can't imagine that the mistakes that people made in Vegas they're going to make in Seattle. You got to think that a lot of GMs learn their lesson. They'll say, oh, we'll just lose one player no matter what it is. But, you know, I mean, obviously people are going to talk about Montreal. I don't think Gallant speaks French. That's a factor. It's a huge factor. But the fact is that he's out there and he's available and there's going to be interest.
Dallas seems like the fit to me.
But, you know, Dallas is going right now. You know, Rick Bonus is doing a nice job there. You know, Rick Bonus is another guy who's, you know, when Anaheim hired Randy Carlyle for the second time, Bob Murray, you know, it came down to Carlyle, him and Travis Green, and he had a really difficult choice, but he went with the guy he knew. If Carlyle wasn't there, that would have been a really interesting call to see who he would have picked. But Bonus, you know, you look at Dallas, they're starting to go. I think they're a legit Stanley Cup contender. They just finished off a season sweep of Colorado, a game they were down. I don't know. I mean, who knows what Jim Nill's thinking, but they're going right now under Rick Bonus. Do you change that?
No, I know. I get that. But complicating all that is you wanted to hire him once. You know, there was that group that in Dallas that was, this is our guy. You have Rick Bonus in there on an interim capacity. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, they've told Bonus that he has the season.
They have.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Complicating that is if Gerard Gallant was once your guy and you believe he still might be your guy, do you run the risk of another team scooping him up?
Absolutely. You know, things change in this business. Like, you take a look at Calgary, and as we're here in Toronto, Jeff Ward, and we're taping this before he's going to join us on set, right? On
Correct.
Wednesday night for Wednesday Night Hockey. So Jeff Ward comes out and he wins his first seven games. And, you know, you think, okay, this guy is going to be the coach, right? And you look into it and the GM won't comment. He doesn't want to light any fires. He's had enough of a crazy year. But what you hear is they're just not guaranteeing everything. And the comment, he's, you know, officially.
You have to see this, by the way, folks. Elliot has just finished typing and is now reading his iPhone as he tries to answer my question. This is his. This is audio tap dancing right now.
I got a call. Yeah, I got a call. So I just had to check and see who the call was. But, you know, the thing is, like, with Jeff Ward, like, basically the Flames line apparently is we're dating, but we're not engaged yet, right?
Right.
So I think you're seeing people just want to keep their options open. Like, one of the storylines about this whole Ray Shiro thing is they gave him a 4-year extension last year, and now all of a sudden he's gone. And what that, you know, says to me is that here's New Jersey and their owners are bajillionaires. They can eat it, but nobody likes losing that kind of money.
Sure.
So I think that all these teams are going to be so careful now that they want to make sure they get the right guy. So if you think the right guy becomes available, you're going to jump at him. For Dallas, like, do you want to really fool around with what's working now? Like, this is a Stanley Cup or bust season for Dallas. I picked them to win.
Damn it.
This is a Stanley Cup or bust season for Dallas. You're starting to go. Do you really want to tamper with that?
You mentioned Ray Shiro. We're going to get there in a couple of moments here, but a couple more things on the Vegas Golden Knights. They have a new head coach. It is Peter DeBoer. So now it is a pretty unique position when a team's main rival now has that team's fired head coach as your head coach. Vegas and Peter DeBoer.
The best line I saw this morning was Kevin Kurz.
Yep.
Who writes for The Athletic and covers the Sharks, who basically woke up and said, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one of the best things I saw in the offseason this year was at the Coaches Site Coaches Clinic, which is always really good. And they had Craig Custance, who's a really good interviewer, sit down, interview Peter DeBoer while we watch clips of Game 7 Vegas San Jose. And Mike Kelly, who was Gallant's assistant, who was also let go today, was in the crowd watching it. And, you know, DeBoer talked about that, but the rivalry was fierce. And the thing about DeBoer, and Jeff, you know your junior hockey much better than I do. He's the kind of guy, like, when he gets into a rivalry with another team, he really hates that other team.
Truth.
Like, you watch New Jersey and the Rangers, him and Tortorella. You watch this San Jose-Vegas rivalry. Like, some coaches, they like kind of smile and laugh and they're kind of like bystanders and all this, let the players get their aggression out. No. He's right in there. And you know, it's got to be
funny.
That?
You saw that with Kitchener.
Yeah.
This is going to be a Memorial World Cup team. And he was, you know what? We need a little something else. And who did he go out and get? Steve Downey.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to Peter about it. I said, now, this is an interesting one because this is a dangerous player. This is at times a reckless player. This is a team that's going to cost you. This is a violent player. You know, you have a Memorial Cup quality team. Why are you trading for Steve Downey? And his line back was, I understand all these things, but I would rather have to tame a tiger than paint stripes on a kitty cat. That's Peter DeBoer.
And you know what? He's competitive. And you know right now, he's a golden knight.
With that, we'll start the podcast. This is 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by GMC Sierra Trucks.
Big news out of New Jersey is the Devils have fired general manager Ray Shero. He was named GM prior to the 2016 season. Since then, the Devils have made the playoffs just once. They're currently last place in the Metropolitan Division.
Hello, everyone. I think you guys have read the statement. Devils have decided to move in a different direction from Ray Shero. Ray was a really talented NHL executive, and we wish him incredibly well in the future. He did some great things for our organization, but the reality is we're not where we want to be. And we thought it was the right thing to do to move in a different direction. We're lucky enough to have a very high quality organization, including Tom Fitzgerald, to step in as acting general manager. Marty Brodeur, who's one of the greatest NHL players ever, is going to take on an added role of advisor to hockey operations. And we're going to start a search for our next GM, which will include, very strongly considering, Tom. And look, we're optimistic about our future. These things are never easy. But we thought this was the right thing to do, and we're moving forward. To our fans, we're really committed to winning. We weren't winning enough, and so we're optimistic, and we're going to put our all into delivering you a winning franchise here in New Jersey. Open it up for questions.
When is this the right time?
There's never a good time to do this, but once you make these decisions, you have to act on them, and we thought this was the right thing to do for the franchise.
One of the owners of the New Jersey Devils, Josh Harris, and the reasons for the dismissal of Ray Shero seem, Elliot, vague.
I think that's a very good way of putting it. I'll tell you a story that I put into my notes this week. So last year, I got a tip that the Devils were working on an extension for Shero.
Right.
And I pursued it. And I asked him, and he said no. And I went back to the source, and he says, not true. And the source was kind of like, he's lying to you. He's lying to you. You got to keep pushing him on this one. I went back to him a few days later, and I asked, and he said no. And it kind of went away. And they announced it on April 8th, after the regular season was over. I kind of did that, like, whiny journalist reporter thing that we all do. And come on.
Pouty.
Like, pouty, whiny, complainy. We had this story. Like, come on. It was at the time of the playoffs, so you don't really think about it too much. But I was annoyed for a couple hours. And, you know, someone reached out to me. And in retrospect, you think about these kinds of things. I think it's someone, this wasn't the person who told me about it, but I think the word kind of got around. So he called me and he said, like, I heard what happened. I go, yeah, I was a bit annoyed about it. And he goes, that is a really complicated situation. But you know how it is, Jeff. It's the playoffs and you're focused on the playoffs and you don't really think about things and you forget and you kind of move on. And then, you know, he shows up for the lottery. He wins the lottery. He does the podcast with us that night.
Is that right there?
Yeah. Hugh Weber was on it too. And not really the night to bring it up. And then, you know, at the draft, they draft Jack Hughes. The next day, he trades for PK. They trade for Gusev. They sign Wade Simmons. Everything's all coming up Devils. We're the Devils. Like, everything's all coming up Devils. And, you know, you don't really think about it. And all of a sudden, he gets fired. And then Monday night, I was looking through some of my notes. I Googled the name Shiro in my notes, and that came up. And I was like, oh, man, I totally forgot about this. So I called the guy who called me, and he said, you know, I bet you if they could do it all over again, it wouldn't have happened. I think that Ray Shiro, when he was in Pittsburgh, he kept a tight circle. And all these GMs keep pretty tight circles because of jerks like me who try to find out things.
Problem with that is after a while, and we've seen this countless times, you alienate yourself away from everybody.
Well, I think some guys are really good at saying, I'm going to talk to everybody, but only a certain amount of people are going to know the final decision before it's made.
We've heard this so many different times, specifically when a GM is fired. I mean, you can count, it's countless times, even most recently, when a GM is fired, the one thing that we always hear is communication stopped. He shut himself off from the rest of the organization. It just stopped. Maybe that's just the nature of that position, that you handle so many things and you juggle so many balls that you feel like you're losing control unless you keep it tight-knit. So I understand it.
Yes.
Like, I'm not saying that this is a knock on all these people, but this is a common thread between general managers and how they behave before they get dismissed.
Yes. However, there are some GMs, like if you take a look at some of the guys who have the most secretive reputations, there's Ron Francis, there's Ron Hextall, there's Steve Yzerman, Lou Lamoriello. I mean, not to say these other guys leak like sieves, but these are the guys who are probably the most secretive. And Shiro had that kind of a reputation. He kept a very small group. And New Jersey has a big group. They've got two very involved owners. Like, you know, like all these guys, they talk about how often do you meet with your owner? How often do you talk to your owner? New Jersey's guys, Harrison Blitzer, who also owned the 76ers, they were very involved. There's a lot of meetings. Like on the scale of how often a GM meets or briefs with ownership, mm-hmm. New Jersey would be high. Hugh Weber was who we on the podcast. He was promoted to president of the organization. There's Scott O'Neill, who's the CEO. There's a new president of the Devils. There's his guys who were Tom Fitzgerald and Dan McKinnon. And then there's the analytics department. And in the aftermath of this conversation, there's been a lot of talks in the analytics department, and we'll get to that. But the fact is that this is a group that wants a larger number of people to be aware of what Ray Shiro was thinking. And I think Ray Shiro was always uncomfortable with that. And as information got out on the Taylor Hall deal, he got even more uncomfortable on that. And I think that as this season unfortunately fell apart for the Devils, the cracks in the relationship really came out. Also, I do think if there was one hockey decision that cost him, it was goaltending.
And the inability of him to procure.
I think they
a
had a decision
last
a couple years ago to buy out Schneider. They didn't do it.
Yeah.
Of course, Schneider's a great person. He struggled. And then I think there was a lot of conversation about what to do with the backup job this year, and they felt he moved slowly. Now, I have no desire to kick Ray Shiro when he's down. I'm sure he has another version of all this, but I do think when you look for reasons as to why things happened, these are the reasons.
This one was shocking and abrupt and, to be honest with you, Elliot, out of nowhere. And people are looking at this and saying, okay, so this ownership group let him fire the coach. This ownership group let him trade a Hart Trophy winner. This ownership group had him sit in on all the draft meetings, trade deadline meetings, as most recent as a week ago, off to the World Junior Hockey Championships in Czech Republic as well. And then, a week later, boom, he's gone. Just optically, it looked like something happened as opposed to an accumulation of things that led to a dismissal. I don't have a handle on it. I don't know, and I don't think that I'm in the minority on that either.
I do think, from what I understand now, a little bit of the timeline, I think they'd made their decision like a few days before it was announced. I think it was trending that way. And I think one of the things that happens is if you don't allow your general manager to have a normal schedule, I guess you just don't want that. I guess you proceed as normal until it's over. I guess. But you're right. Like, I mean, especially the 4-year extension thing is, I mean, I'm happy for Ray Shiro in that way. You're out of a job, but you're taken care of.
How different in terms of vision, how he sees the team, team direction, how different is Tom Fitzgerald to Ray Shiro? Are they more similar than different? Because it seemed to me when you listen to, and again, you have to really parse words and read in between the lines. When you listen to Josh Harris talk, it seems like we need someone who has a different vision for this team, or our visions weren't aligned. I've sort of always looked at Tom Fitzgerald and Ray Shiro and said, these are two guys that are more aligned than they're different, aren't they?
Yes, I think that's true. I think there's a lot of history between those two guys. They worked together before. They were very close. But the one story I always remember is when Joel Quenneville was fired as coach of the St. Louis Blues, you know, Mike Kitchen was asked to take over, and he didn't want to do it. And he called Joel Quenneville, and Joel Quenneville basically told him, don't be an idiot. Like, that's the way this job works. Like, I think the same thing in New Jersey. Alain Nasruddin, one of his closest friends and biggest mentors in coaching was John Hines. And John Hines told him, you have to do it. That's the way this works. I think there's an understanding that that's the way this works. But I think Fitzgerald has a good chance of keeping this job, A, providing he wants it. Like, one of the big questions is, how much say do you really have? Like, Martin Brodeur is in there now, too. He doesn't want to be the GM, but he's going to be an advisor, and he's going to be, or he could be the Shanahan president of hockey ops with the GM underneath him.
Right.
He doesn't want to be the day-to-day guy, but Brodeur's still got big juice in New Jersey. Like, he is still a very influential person around that organization in that market. So I think the question that Fitzgerald and other people want to know is, how is this going to work? Who's going to have the power? Who's going to make the ultimate decision? Now let's get to the analytic department, because this is a conversation that's going around.
Tyler Dello, Matt Cain.
So they offered up a position last year. Tyler was hired in April. Matt Cain was hired later. And what I heard was they had an opening for one spot, but they liked both candidates too much. And they did, you know, if you're an organization, you think both these guys are useful, you find room for both of them. And that's what the Devils did. However, I don't have the job posting anymore, but at one time I did. I don't know what I did with it because I'm an idiot and I didn't save it somewhere. But basically the job posting was written in a way that sure created the impression, since I don't have it right in front of me, that you report to ownership and not to the general manager. And that's unusual. And
that would make a GM uncomfortable.
It would make a GM uncomfortable. And look, I'm not saying they submarined Ray Shiro. I don't know that, so I'm not saying that. And I know that whenever the analytics versus old school debate comes, it's a complete fiasco everywhere it's handled. It's like kids fighting in kindergarten sandbox. But if you're a general manager and you have a group here that is allowed, sort of operates in a nebulous way, and nobody's really sure of how the reporting works, but Tyler was recommended by a guy who works in the organization, Alex Rucker, who is very important in that whole sports organization and a very bright person. So I think that there's this question about what is this? And I think that's what Fitzgerald's got to feel out, and I think that's what people who are other contenders for the job are going to feel out. I don't think New Jersey wants to have necessarily the old school way of running your organization.
I believe that.
But what does it mean exactly?
Is this closer to a Carolina structure then than anything else in the NHL?
I mean, it's possible. I don't think anybody really knows right now. But I do think Fitzgerald has a legit shot at the job.
What does this mean then for New Jersey right now? Everything that we do on radio, television, later on tonight, well, last night, as you hear this podcast on Thursday morning or later into the weekend podcast, everything is under the umbrella of trade deadline is on the horizon.
Well, I think that they'll look at their rentals. Like, I've heard there's already been one good offer out there for Vatanen, and I'm sure there's going to be more if they don't want to keep him. You know, I had a chance to talk to a couple of their other UFAs. Andy Green, he really said I hadn't thought about it a lot. He's got a no trade clause. It's something that he'll have to think about if it becomes reality. The one thing he told me, and he'll be 38 next year, he wants to play next season. He's not thinking of retiring. Wayne Simmons, we've reported before, did not want to be a rental, and he didn't come right out and say that. He said, I've got no control over it, but you know, he did say that when you sign with a team, you don't sign for three quarters of a season. You sign to stay. So I think it's his preference to say, by the way, you know, I asked him about, he's got a newborn daughter, 7 months old, and boy, did he light up when he was asked about his daughter. I think the biggest question is, they've got some, you know, really good signed pieces. Blake Coleman and Nick Palmieri. And what one of the players told me was...
Kyle Palmieri,
that's right. There's too many Palmieris. Coleman had a hat trick the other night, and, you know, Palmieri, we all know how good he is. Like, one of the players said to me, you know, you got to have reason for fans to come to your games. You got to create a good culture around guys like Nico Hischier and Jack Hughes. And, you know, he just said to me, like, why give away those players? Like, what's your identity? And so I think that'll be interesting to see, because I think the temptation will be, we can get a lot. Now, they talked about they're sick of losing. Their ownership did the process in Philadelphia, which was the ultimate, you know, scorched earth policy.
Even I know about that.
Yes, but...
says a lot.
They say they're sick of losing. Like, do you make yourself better if you trade those guys? I don't know. I mean, like, I think that that's the big question is, A, are you trying to create an identity? What is it? And number two, like, do you look at you've made the playoffs once since 2012. Do you look at it and say, we have to commit to something here so our fans believe it?
What about moving PK Subban?
I saw his scrum yesterday where he was asked about that.
Listen, you know, in my career to this point, I've never asked for a trade. And it's because maybe I'm a little bit old school that way. You know, I've learned from a lot of veteran players in the league that, you know, put their head down, come to work and do their job, you know, and I'm getting paid to do a job. I have to come and do it every day. And but the business is the business, you know. But as far as me, I love my teammates here. I love the guys. It's a great group. It's fun to come to the rink every day. As frustrating as the season's been on the ice, we actually get fired up and are excited to play every game. And I think that's part of because we have young players on our team that are just successful. Some of these guys haven't even played in this arena yet, you know. So, you know, it's exciting every night to come to the rink and know that guys have that energy. And I'm an energetic guy, so when you have guys around you that have energy too, it's fun to play the game and go on the road. And I think that we're looking at these next games as challenges, and we're taking them head on.
The tough thing with talking about Subban, and this is not his fault, like, people go bananas if they think that you're ripping him in any way for who he is and the fact he likes entertainment. Now, he started to come on a bit lately. He started to play a bit better.
Scoring goals.
But it took him a while to get going. He's under contract for $9 million the next 2 years. In a league where cap space is tight, are you taking him at 2.5 years and what's that, $22
million? When does Colorado have to do the MacKinnon deal?
I can't see Colorado doing that. I just can't.
No, I know. Like, that market would be limited. Having said that, if you're looking to try to maximize this and move it forward quicker, because, listen, there's no one coming up from the American Hockey League that's going to save anything here for New Jersey. And outside of Ty Smith, I don't really see anyone coming from the outside that's going to join this team that's really going to jolt it. This just might be one of those situations where you just need those kids to get better every year, and that's going to take a while.
You have to commit to it. You have to have a plan, and you have to stick to their plan. Like, all of a sudden, like, Blackwood looks like he's a good goalie, right? You know, I had a brief chance to say hi to Rolly Melanson, their goalie coach, yesterday. And all he really said was, I just said, look, Blackwood looks good. And he goes, you know, we're excited about him. So, you know, that could solve one of your problems. But then you have to grow. And the other thing, too, is New Jersey's a place you have to draft and develop guys. It's hard to get guys to go there. Mm-hmm. So you have to draft and develop guys and make them say, okay, I like it here. I'm going to stay. So you got to do that with the guys you have.
We move on. And in any other week, this would have been dealt with on this podcast about 25 minutes ago.
Yes.
Zach Cassian, Matthew Tkachuk. Saturday night, hockey night in Canada.
Left bomb, gets Lindholm in deep for Zach Cassian, gets bumped hard by you-know-who, Tkachuk. And Cassian's mad, and here we go. Now there's going to be penalties in the game. They've been going at each other on and off all night, and Zach Cassian is incensed. Now, we showed earlier in the first period the one hit that knocked his helmet off, and I don't know if you could hear, but it was McDavid yelling at Cassian to have his head up because he saw coming back from his point coverage Tkachuk coming down, and I don't think you're necessarily going to see Tkachuk going into the penalty box. I think this is all going to be Cassian. Cassian made his decision, snapped after the hit there, and he got all the shots in.
Number 19 is still standing at the bench, and number 44 has gone to the dressing room inside of 2 minutes to go in the period. So he was coming down pretty fast, but he turned before the hit.
As you're watching this, because I watched this from the comfort of my couch, you watched it from the comfort of the studio that doubles as the ice surfing studio on Tuesday night. As you're watching all of this with your crew, what goes through your mind?
How awesome an important Battle of Alberta is.
Yep.
And you forgot that these two were at the center of a huge Battle of Alberta game last year as well, although it wasn't as impactful in the standings. Everybody talks about this playoff system and how it hasn't worked. It's worked for Anaheim, LA. It's worked for the California teams.
Yeah.
It's worked for the Pacific Division for the most part. You know, Vegas, San Jose that we just talked about. But I think there would be less complaints if there would have been more battles of Alberta, more battles of Ontario, more Toronto, Montreal, more New York, New York, New York, New Jersey. There's been some Philly, Pittsburgh, but if there'd been more.
More Boston, Montreal.
There's been a lot of Boston, Montreal.
Not as much as people would have
wanted.
Yeah, but
not as much as you want.
Montreal at the height of their powers.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like
maybe a Florida, Tampa thrown in for a little bit of spice.
I'm good with
once.
That. 100%.
Please let that happen once.
Florida, Tampa would be great. But I like the idea behind it. It just hasn't worked. I think the Battle of Alberta is important. And all of a sudden, both these teams are grinding away and they're in it. And that was huge. I will tell you, Jeff, 1980s Elliott, who was 10 to 20 from that decade, thought there should have been no suspension for Cassian. You deal with that on the ice. Tkachuk decided he was going to be a bleep disturber, and Zach Cassian took it into his hands to handle it. That's the way I've always believed. I've always believed if you grow up and you're going to be a bully, somebody's going to smack you in the face once in a while. That's life. Tkachuk knew exactly what he was doing. And he got the power play that gave Calgary the winning goal. I was okay with everything that happened from Cassian. I did not want a suspension. 21st century Elliott, who understands that what we know about brains and concussions, recognizes the message the NHL is trying to send. And that is that with what we know about this, if there's going to be a fight, it has to be two willing combatants. Earlier this year, Milan Lucic got 2 games for that thing with Cole Sherwood.
Cole Sherwood, yeah.
They said, look, you've got to be a willing participant. So I get it, although the old school me didn't like it.
Darnell Nurse got 3 for Roman Pollock. Matt Karkner got 1 for Brian Boyle.
Yes, forgot about that one.
That incident. This one, I think, I look at the Department of Player Safety, and that's them saying exactly what you're saying. You cannot repeatedly smash your fist into someone's face who is unwilling to engage. Now, the question becomes, out of all of this, these two teams meet again on the 29th, and the story has been well told. If you're Zach Rinaldo, for example, do you not, in warm-up, go to center ice, call Cassian over, and say, I'm paying the tab?
The old Kyle Clifford?
I'm paying the tab. I'm paying Matthew Tkachuk's bill tonight.
Well,
and even will that be enough?
You know what? Like, it reminds me of the whole Kyle Clifford thing, like where he went to Tkachuk in the skate and said, you have to answer for this. And, you know, he eventually did. And he fought that night.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, if it was me, I wouldn't want anybody to have to answer for what I did. So I'm betting Tkachuk does it. And
Cassian?
No, they find somebody else there. He's not in Cassian's league.
Okay. But there is still an issue.
Although
with,
the fact is, he did run over Cassian 3 times.
There is still a Cassian issue here to deal with.
Yeah.
Like, this is where this one gets tricky.
Well, I think there's a couple of things here. First of all, I have no doubt the league will be in touch with both of these teams before that.
Which is why the first time they meet after that, it'll generally be quiet. It'll be the second.
Well, and they meet twice in 3 days.
That's what I'm saying. It won't be the first one. It'll be quiet. We'll promote
and
fireworks.
By the way, I'm really hoping we make that Wednesday game a national. But here's the other thing in the A's is that the famous story about Wendell Clark, Doug Gilmore,
yes.
Gino Ogic, and Pavel Bure. Ogic's running over Gilmore. Clark says, if you keep that up, we're going to run over Bure. Like, I'm wondering, does Cassian go wild that night and just run over other Flames? Like, does he run over Johnny Gaudreau? Does he run over Mark Giordano?
That is, so we used
That's
to,
the old school way of dealing.
We used to work with Marty McSorley here at Sportsnet. Mm-hmm. And I would do a ton of regional games with Marty, and we do Hockey Central together at night when we used to do a late edition. And one night we were out after the show and we were talking about 93. And we were talking about the fight with Wendell Clark, but I was more curious about the elbow to Doug Gilmore. Because that was an elbow that Marty warmed up in Florida. And it arrived in Toronto when Doug Gilmore stepped over the blue line. Like,
the Leafs coasting home to victory here in game one. Anderson comes in. Gilmore was hit inside the line by McSorley. And this is going to draw Clark and McSorley into a racket. They're going, throwing punches. Oh, Clark is nailing McSorley. Now McSorley comes back. Gilmore was hit inside the line. He's still down. He hasn't moved. Gilmore trying to get up. McSorley was grabbed by Clark, who threw that hit on Gilmore. And Clark and McSorley are flailing away each other. Two of the heavyweights of the league. And no nonsense here. They're going at it. McSorley has the sweater off, and Clark nails him with another uppercut. Now Clark gets hit, ducks away from one. McSorley now pounding away, and the two linesmen just scared to take a chance on getting in there, I guess. Finally, they get in. But Clark came back to McSorley, and they went at it.
If that elbow happens today, it's 30 games, and it's pitchforks, and get him out of the game, and send out the monster, and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it was like, okay, got him with an elbow. And I said, what was with the elbow before the fight on Gilmore? And he said, Wendell kept going at Wayne. And I went by the bench and I said, Wendell stops it or he gets it. And he pointed at Gilmore. And he said, Wendell didn't stop. And said, I went by the bench and said, okay, Wendell's just made your life really bad now. And the minute he stepped over the blue line, he went at him with that elbow. And that was that style of enforcement. I'm not going to go after you. I'm going to go after your skilled guy. So there is that sidebar too. If you're Cassian, are you going after Tkachuk, who is not a willing combatant with you? If you're Cassian, do you not say, well, this might be a long night for 23?
What's going to happen here is, you know, Cassian's going to get a talking to. All the Oilers and all the Flames are going to be told, if you're going to do something, make sure it's clean.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if this is a game that Colin Campbell is sent to. That's happened periodically.
I would expect that.
Since Steve Moore.
We probably haven't seen this since Matt Cook and Sean Thornton. So I was thinking about this last night on my way home. Is this the last time we saw this? Was it Cook and Thornton? We're all trying to figure out who has to do what and what the obligation here is for everybody. Because really, you can make the argument that the obligation for everybody here is nothing. Play hockey. There were a couple of body checks. Cassian grabbed him and punched him. Issue over.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like that. But really, you can make the argument that the whole thing was over by the time we all went to bed on Saturday night. What do you think happens?
Well, Cassian's talking a big game right now.
Sure is.
Wish you did anything differently?
No, I'd do it again all over again. It's one of those things. After speaking with Paris on the phone, he explained how the hit is not dirty. That gave me some clarity of what you can do and what you can't do now. So I put that in the memory bank. And then clean or dirty, if someone takes two runs at you on your blind side, I told them since I've been in minor midget, I've stood up for myself and my teammates. People don't do that to me or my teammates when I'm out there. To me, those are two dangerous hits. If they're clean, they're still predatorial, which is completely fine. I'm a big boy. I love big boy hockey. But if you're going to play big boy hockey, you got to answer the bell every once in a while. I'm not crying about the hits. It's hockey. It's a game of hockey. It's rough. I thought they're a little bit on the blind side, but at the end of the day, I've laid big hits like that. I've been hit like that. But two times is more than enough. You play with fire, eventually you're going to get burned. And he messed with the wrong guy, and I don't think he realizes that we're in the same division. And have a great memory.
Zach, are you able to make a case for yourself when you're speaking?
I do think as we get closer to it, I think it'll calm down. I love Draisaitl's quote about Tkachuk in the All-Star game.
What's that?
How would you feel if Tkachuk's playing with your butter?
Probably get off the ice.
Tkachuk is the kind of guy, he'll get on the ice and Draisaitl will have a breakaway and he'll like, do you want it? Like, are you going to get off or do you want the puck? It's going to calm down. It's going to be the talk of All-Star weekend or one of them anyway.
Yeah.
And then that week it'll be crazy and then everybody will interfere. Everybody will step in and say, you have to understand that there's a limit to what you're going to be allowed to do here. And if you cross that line, you're getting whacked.
This may not be palatable to Oilers fans who really want Tkachuk to pay. But is this all over if opening faceoff, the two coaches just say, let's get this over with. Cassian lines up with Ronaldo. Is it done?
Well, I don't know. It's not. Tkachuk has to be involved in some way. You know, Zach Ronaldo is not really in Cassian's class either. The one guy in Calgary who is, it's Lucic.
Do you want social media to melt?
You know, I have to tell you, there's a guy on Twitter. His name is Rob Perez. His Twitter handle is Worldwide Wob, although he changes it from time to time. He is one of the best Twitter followers out there. He's an NBA guy. He really loves his basketball. But his feed is fun. Like, he throws all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And he has this one thing he sends out whenever a crazy story happens in the NBA. And it's basically, it's been 0 days since the NBA was overly dramatic. And I always laugh my head off whenever I see that tweet. And one of my buddies said to me this morning, he said, after Gallant got fired, he says, the NHL is like the NBA right now. Like, what's happening in this league? Like with the Cassian and the Gallant and the coaching changes. You know, the other thing too is with the Cassian thing, how much the former players weighed in. Teemu Selänne, PJ, Ryan Whitney, Scotty Upshaw, although he's technically still playing, he's overseas.
Yep.
I know that might drive people crazy, but I think it's good. I think you want that kind of conversation. I think you want that.
The more you can have former players weighing in on current events, the better.
But it's very, like my buddy said, it's very NBA-like right now, the NHL. It's crazy.
It's excellent. All right, off that page. And we'll see what happens on the 29th between those two teams. Nicholas Backstrom, it's a 5-year contract that is $46 million. And outside of escrow and tax, he sticks all of it in his jeans, representing himself, Drew Doughty-style Elliott.
So I think he read the notes where I said, like, I would never do this. I tried and I heard he'd read it. So first of all, congratulations to him. He earned it. Look, there's a lot of people could look at this deal and say it doesn't make any sense for Washington. I kind of went through it. I used Cap Friendly to kind of figure it out. You look at the contract. So it's a 5-year deal. It's $9.2 million. He's 32 years old. It's 11% of the cap. And, you know, Daniel and Henrik Sedin were about the same at their 33-year-old deal. They were 10.89%. I think those ones paid themselves off. Spezza's 10.87% at 32. That was a tougher one. Blake Wheeler just signed it, 10.38%, age 32. I think the Jets are comfortable with that. With jury's still out. And Ryan Kesler, 9.63%, age 31, started great. And then we all knew Kesler. It was a race against the clock for Kesler, and his body broke down. I thought it was really interesting. You know, when I spoke to Brian McClellan about it yesterday, he said a couple of things. First of all, we compare him to Joe Thornton. He's not a speed player. He's a smart thinking player who makes plays and runs your top power play. I guess you'd say Carlson runs it, but he's a big part of it. And, you know, I think that's really interesting. I think it's a really interesting way to look at it. But number two, I asked him, like, were you worried about this? Because when I negotiated my own deal, I took it very personally. I said, were you worried about that with Backstrom? And he said no, because I think we have a good, direct, honest relationship and we both wanted to get it done. And I thought it was it basically what McClellan said to me was, we wanted to make sure we could still ice a competitive team, but we knew he deserved to be rewarded. And, you know, I think it's interesting. I think the Capitals are taking a bit of a risk, a calculated risk, but they're saying, all right, this is a guy who was a major part of our cup winner. And if we're going to take that risk and we believe it's calculated, we're going to make sure that he's rewarded for it. I got time for that.
If you look at his draft class, so 206, and this is, you know, Claude Giroux, who ended up going a little bit later on in the first round, but Jonathan Toews, Jordan Staal, Eric Johnson goes first overall. That was a Vancouver draft. Phil Kessel is in that draft as well. He's outscored everybody. Like, in his draft class, he has outscored the bunch. As we record this, 908 points in 934 games. Is he not, and you can understand why, because the nature of the captain there and that personality and how those headlines overshadow everything. Is he not criminally underrated? Like, not just underrated, like, oh yeah, he's underrated, like we used to talk about Louis Erickson, but like criminally underrated.
Oh yeah. And you know why? Because he's quiet. Number one, he's quiet. Number two, look who he's around on that team. You've got Ovechkin. You've got Kuznetsov. And the year they won the cup, that was the year Kuznetsov really elevated. And he's flamboyant. He likes the
sure.
the bird celebration and all that stuff. And he's a hilarious talker. And number three, you've got Carlson, who's getting all the attention for the offense, right? Oshie's a guy who people gravitate to. Orpik was a guy people gravitate to. Holtby's a really fascinating guy. And that's not to say that, you know, any of these guys are better people than Backstrom, but I just think he liked the relative anonymity and was happy to have people gravitate to someone else. Like, I was thinking as when you sign it, Hall of Famer?
Based on the numbers.
I think he absolutely is.
Although the one thing you do wonder about the individual hardware, and maybe people will look at this and say, how does this guy never want a Selke?
Well, Barry Trotz would always bitch about that, right? That he never. But the thing is, like, how much hardware can you win when you've got Ovechkin there?
Mm-hmm.
You're never the MVP on your team. Now, should he be penalized for that?
Nope.
Like, to me, this guy's a Hall of Fame. And you know what elevates it, too, is that they had a lot of hardship there, a lot of painful losses, and they figured it out. And he was a big part of that. Like, to me, he's a Hall of Famer.
Do him and Ovechkin conclude their careers together?
I asked McClellan if that was the case, and he laughed and said they haven't brought it up to me yet. But I wouldn't suppose. I thought it was interesting that Backstrom said this isn't necessarily my last deal.
Was he going to go on Evergreens at the end?
You know, like
just one year, hey, one year, one year, one year,
Andy
one year.
Green, 38, still wants to play. Thornton's still playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Backstrom, you could be 37 when the deal's done. I guess he still wants to play. I mean, if you love it, you really love it. They tell me that he's got an unbelievably good deadpan sense of humor, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you see Ovechkin doing that? Or is Ovechkin does Ovechkin have one more deal in him and then...
You know, I got to tell you, so he's always said, like, it all depends on his health. He's going to make a run for this goal record, eh?
And would that be the only reason he hangs around?
I don't think it's the only reason. I think the guy likes winning.
I think so, too. But the end, this is just like, okay, it's another year for Ovechkin. This year, he's going to get 25
but
and
doesn't
it's closer.
He seem
and then
like
here's
the
another few million to chase it a little bit more.
Sorry, Amel's glaring at me. I should not have interrupted you.
Oh, please.
But doesn't he seem like the kind of guy who would relish the chase?
Yes.
Like, to me, like, he's a competitive guy. Like, even if he didn't think he was going to do it, don't you think he'd love to try?
What would hockey fans do with that?
I think they'd be okay if
we're just being blunt about this. Alex Ovechkin is back this year because he's chasing Wayne.
I think people would be okay. I think there used to be the whole Canada-Russia thing, and that year Washington won, people wanted him to win.
Yes, they did.
Except for the Penguins. They're the only people who didn't want him to win. But people wanted Ovechkin to win. People looked at the way he always came back. He played hard. He tried. He suffered brutal losses. It cut his insides out, but he came back. Like 10 years ago, I don't think people would have been okay, but I think people are okay. I think they're okay with him. They recognize his greatness. They respect his greatness. You know, when this is over, this to me is going to be the great debate. The top five. It's not the Mount Rushmore of hockey because Rushmore's got four faces. I think there's the five faces of hockey, or Gretzky in no particular order, or Gretzky, Lemieux, Richard, Howe. Where are you putting Crosby and Ovechkin in this? Like, are they in the top five? Ovechkin's going to go down statistically, adjusted for era, as the greatest goal scorer ever.
Then he bumps Richard.
This podcast will not be heard in Quebec.
If he's going to bump Rocket out of that spot, then Rocket Richard. But then you can talk about the cultural phenomenon that Rocket Richard was.
It's tough.
You see, it's funny too because I still put Béliveau in that conversation with all those guys as well.
Well, that's fair. I mean, I got no problem with that. But the thing is, like, Crosby too, like, where is he going to go in this? Guy's won everything. He's the epitome of winner. So the other night, I watched the college football championship game, and I was there, and Arash was there, and Dave Amber was there. Amber skipped out on the bill as usual. And, you know, what kind of happened was, I didn't realize it during the game because we were chatting. They had a whole group of people there. They named like the best college football players of all time. And they went for a lot of older players. Like, it's almost like they didn't want to be accused of recency bias, which I thought was interesting. Like, I don't get upset about these lists. They're there for debate.
Sure.
I think that there will be people who look at Ovechkin and Crosby moving into this pantheon, which they deserve to be in. They'll be like, recency bias. But those guys deserve to be there.
Bump out Howe.
Gordie Howe, Wayne Gretzky's favorite player.
I get that.
You know who history is kinder to, too, than in the moment, is Mario.
History's kinder to?
Like, just remember, in the moment, I don't think people... Remember how long it took for Mario to get acceptance outside of Pittsburgh?
Well, first of all, he didn't want to go.
But then they embraced him.
But they didn't really embrace him until 87.
People ripped him at the Canada.
That goal... You don't think that that goal in that tournament changed a lot of perceptions about Mario Lemieux? Cops Coliseum goal?
I think it did, but he had that great tournament. I remember he played in Rendezvous 87, and they were calling him like a floater and things like that. Then he had that great tournament with Gretzky, but I still think until Pittsburgh was successful, there were still people who weren't convinced.
This is why, by the way, the 1987 was the greatest year for hockey ever. You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.
So we just took a break in recording this podcast, and I went to walk over because I sent the blog in. By the way, success.
All done?
Got the blog done. Success. Wow.
Now, can you remember anything that I asked you?
No, I can't remember what I wrote. Like, this is going to be good because I can't remember anything I wrote.
Great.
So I walked by Christine Simpson, who's sitting doing some work in the office here.
Great piece on Nate Thompson on the weekend.
Yeah, she did
a
beautiful,
outstanding.
A beautiful piece. I should have told her that too. But she told me she's working Vegas, Montreal this weekend. So she was on the Vegas website in the morning and she refreshed it and Peter DeBoer's name came up and she thought it had been hacked. She was like, who do I speak to?
So calling up all of our contacts in Vegas. You've been hacked.
You've been hacked.
Peter DeBoer, you remember San Jose Sharks, your fiercest rivals?
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty funny story. All right, a couple of other things around the NHL. Get your thoughts on before we get to some hashtag Ask31. Pekka Rinne goes for it.
Crawford will go to the bench again. Rinne will try it.
Pekka Rinne scores.
Rinne going deep for the empty net. It is bouncing. Score! Pekka Rinne! What a shot!
Oh, my God.
He has scored a goal.
Unbelievable.
Oh, he's been trying that a couple of times over the last few years.
Oh, my God.
And what a perfect opportunity. And he buries the Blackhawks.
And then Connor Hellebuck goes
for it. Bo Horvat saw that all the way.
Well, there was no way that it was that was happening with Bo Horvat on the ice. He was going to do whatever it took to stop that shot.
Could you imagine?
Block that kick.
If we would have had a lacrosse goal and a goalie goal in the same night, that's like Ghostbusters, dogs and cats living together, the world collapsing on itself.
It has been one of the more newsworthy weeks that we've seen in a long time between coach firing, GM firing.
Forsberg pulled it off.
Forsberg pulls off the lacrosse move. We have 1986 between the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers again. So now we can actually do a proper intro for the Battle of Alberta and not have to just use old Dave Semenko and Jim Poplinski viz to try to hype up an emotional game between these two teams. And we've got goalies going for it and goalie scoring. Do you know?
Okay.
First goaltender ever credited with a goal in the NHL.
Was it Michel Plasse?
Okay, so that was in the IHL. Oh. It wasn't in the NHL. That happened in Kansas City.
So it's not Billy Smith, I assume.
Well, Billy Smith is... Okay, so there's a weird twist to this one. Let me get my Society for International Hockey Research geek hat on.
Can I just say, Amal, since you're sitting here listening to this, I hate trivia questions where there's like an explanation.
Like, you'll like this.
It's either right or wrong.
You'll like this. Okay, let me know what you think about this one then. So, February 15th, 1977.
Okay.
The Los Angeles Kings are playing at home in a game against the New York Islanders. In net for the Kings is Rogge Vachon. In net for the New York Islanders is Chico Resch.
Mm.
It is a delayed penalty. So Chico gets pulled. Okay, this is shades of what we saw between the Colorado Rockies and the Islanders when Billy Smith got credited for the goal after Rob Ramage fired the puck down the ice and went in the net. Billy Smith was the last player to touch the puck, so he got credited with the goal.
Mm-hmm.
So a similar event happens. So Chico gets pulled. The Islanders fire the puck inadvertently into their own net.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ruled that Rogge Vachon was the last player to touch the puck. And so Rogge Vachon gets credited with the first goalie goal in the NHL. And right away in the arena, it's, okay, let's start selling here. Oh, a piece of history, the first goaltender to ever score. Make sure you program
shirts.
And it was in L.A.
Jack Kent Cook.
Right? So right away.
That makes perfect sense, yes.
Sell, sell, sell. But upon further review, and it was either later on that night or maybe even the next morning, I think Bob Miller may have caught it. They realized that he wasn't the last, that it actually deflected off the stick of Vic Vanaski. Mm. And so the goal was credited to him. So for a number of hours, maybe even as much as 12 or 18, Rogge Vachon was credited with scoring the first goal in the history of the NHL, only to be wiped out. Was that enough of a caveat for you not to roll your eyes at this story?
I think it's a great story, but he doesn't deserve the credit. Billy Smith deserves the credit. But it's a good story. I really like it.
Yay. Maybe stories later on when I get to Kelly Sutherland. Elsewhere around the NHL, things to get your thoughts on. Elvis Merzlikins. Back-to-back shutouts for the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yes.
Shuts out Vegas. Shuts out the Boston Bruins. Quick thought on Elvis. Then I want to get to Brad Marchand here.
Just say that I really respect what he's done because it looked like a disaster at the beginning of the year. And whenever you have a kid comes over to North America really for the first time, hype prospect, and it starts out poorly, you're sitting there and you're going, oh my God, is he going to be a total write-off? Like, look at what we're looking about some of these young players. Like, Jesse Puljujärvi, he's overseas now. No, he was here longer. Elias Andersson, he's overseas now. He was here longer. These kids are, you know, trying to regain their confidence. They're going through some stuff right now as they try to find their footing. And for this kid, Elvis, to pick up the way he has, I think it's really impressive. The whole Columbus story this year is amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. It's everybody thought they were going to be a total goner. They were going to be bottom of the Eastern Conference, and they're where they are. I think it's a really impressive story.
Okay, Brad Marchand and the shootout that wasn't.
Brad Marchand must score to keep the game going. Marchand overskates the puck. He touched it, though, with his stick. What's the ruling? The officials get together.
He moved it forward.
If he touched the puck with his stick, that's going to count.
He did move it forward.
What an ending this would be. Flyers are off the bench, but there's been no call made yet. No goal. It's over. Marchand flubs it. And the Flyers win in the shootout. 6-5 is your final. I'm not sure these fans can have any sweeter an ending than that.
Top of the puck. Barely. Oh, moves it.
I don't know that I've heard Keith Jones with quite as hearty a laugh as I heard, because I was watching the Philadelphia broadcast. It's maybe the most satisfying you've ever heard out of a broadcaster. Keith Jones, it's really good.
I mean, I've never seen anything like that before. It was hard not to look at it and kind of like, wow. Like, people tweet at me, it happened with Marcus Naslund of Vancouver Canucks.
Okay.
I don't remember, but, you know, Twitter's always right, so I'll take their word for it. But, you know, the thing about Marchand is, if there was anybody who was uniquely perfect to handle it, it's that guy. Because he loves being the villain, right?
Or the tweet with the Stanley Cup.
Well, like,
what is statute of limitations on that when you can use that as a retort?
Oh, I don't.
Forever?
If you win the Stanley Cup, you get to wave it in people's face forever.
Right.
Well, first of all, you know, he didn't duck. He showed up right after the game and answered
sure.
for it.
No surprise.
All good. Yeah, he always does. He's a good talker. But, you know, he showed up. He did it, which is great. But, you know, there were people saying, like, should he have clapped back at that fan?
Why not?
Now, the way I look at it is, I wouldn't, personally, I wouldn't give anybody the satisfaction of thinking you're getting to me. Only under extreme conditions would I ever go after anyone on Twitter.
But Brad Marchand, that's heel persona,
but that's the
though.
Thing.
That's
like,
pro wrestling,
if
man.
You have to know who you're dealing with, right? Like, if you go at him, you have to know there's a chance he's coming back at you. So I don't have a problem with it. It fits to his identity. And, you know, the thing is, like, I got to tell you, if I was Brad Marchand and I had, what, $60 million in the bank and I'd won a Stanley Cup and I'd won a World Cup.
How about, and I'm one of the best players in the game.
And last year he was second on my ballot for the Hart Trophy, although I'm sure he doesn't care about that. I'm building a Hall of Fame case, too, I think, if you're Brad Marchand. I wouldn't care what anybody said about me. You can say whatever you want.
I think he's just having fun.
Oh, I think he loves it. I agree with you. And I think it spurs him on.
Sure. Well, he's not allowed to lick people anymore. He's got to do something.
That's right. You got to let out your frustration another way.
Did you see Kelly Sutherland pop in his chompers before making a call the other night?
No, I missed that one.
And there's going to be a penalty here.
Spurgeon, I think, is going off for holding Jake Virtanen. And
interference call of some sort, and it might be Antoine Roussel for goalie interference.
So Kelly Sutherland goes to make the call. Before he does, he reaches into his pocket and puts in his teeth.
Vancouver penalty number 26, 2 minutes for goaltender interference.
Man.
It's such a great hockey moment.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, there's been so much personality this week, we don't even know how to handle it all.
So you want to hear a good teeth story?
Sure.
Okay, guy by the name of Sven Tomba Johansson.
Okay.
Okay, Swedish hockey player, 1957 Boston Bruins. He was poised to become the first Swedish hockey player ever in the NHL. He has said, and he's no longer with us, but he has said before he passed that the reason he felt that he never got a shot with the Boston Bruins is because of a prank that he pulled in the room. So 1957, there's pictures of him in a Bruins jersey at training camp online. He's in the Boston Bruins room before a training camp one day, and he notices that all the guys like to joke with one another, all ribbing each other, and it's a standard. Like, we've all seen jokes in the dressing room, oh, you know, shaving cream and the white towels, ha, 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 Vaseline doorknobs, ha, ha, like that stuff, right? It's stuff we've all done, goofy stuff. So he's like, oh, okay, I'm going to fit in here. I'm going to play my own joke on the guys, and they'll think it's funny, and I'll fit in. So this is the era where, again, this is the 50s, so nobody in hockey has their own teeth. Nobody. Everyone's got the fake chompers. And so what they do is they'll have a glass of water. They put it at their stall and they put the chompers in the glass of water and they go and skate. So He makes sure that he's the last guy going out of the room for the skate. And his idea to bond with the team is his joke was he took all of the teeth and mixed them up. So the only way to find out which one was your teeth was to try on everybody else's teeth.
Oh, my God. That's something Wayne Cashman would have done when he was there.
It's a total Cashman thing, too. Actually, a lot of those Bruins. Turk Sanderson, you could see Turk doing something like that as well. But this is even early. I mean, this is 1957. So, yeah, Sven Tumba. And he went on to become
I've never heard that story before. That's a great story.
Athletes. All right, let's get to some thoughts, and hopefully you'll be a little more kind to people that tweet us than Brad Marchand has been online as we fire this up. Hashtag Ask 31. Some interesting ones come in today, Elliot.
Okay.
From Adrian Middlebrook. Adrian does communications for the GTHL.
Okay.
So she asks this one. Women's 3-on-3 at the NHL All-Star Game, is this one step closer to a women's pro league backed by the NHL?
Oh, God.
That's Adrian. A grenade.
Why
Boom!
Don't you just like... Seriously, why don't I just jump on that and get my stomach grilled into 30 different pieces? This is a tough story. I will tell you that, Adrian, I'll be honest, this story is, it's not easy because it's laced with landmines. And in the past, when I've reported on women's hockey, I've been really amazed at the undercurrent of trouble that comes with it. The hard feelings, the intense emotions, the pitched battles that come. Like, the people involved in this take it very personally. And I understand that. There's a lot at stake, but they take it very personally. And then the first time I realized this was when I reported on the outdoor game at Gillette Stadium and the negotiations that went on between the Canadian Women's League and the National Women's League to get that game done. Like, people in the league told me, you know, be careful with this one. It's a live wire. You have no idea how personally the two leagues take this and how much they dislike and distrust each other. And I got a sense of it. And the league told me later it was a very, very difficult negotiation. You know, last year at the All-Star Game in San Jose, there was somebody in the crowd who tweeted out that Brianna Decker was the female player that tested the obstacle course, and somebody took a personal video and said that her time beat Leon Draisaitl's time and therefore deserved to be paid the money. And, you know, we checked it. I checked it with the league. I checked it with our truck. We actually ran it and clocked it, and we turned out that it wasn't true. And when I tweeted out it wasn't true, people called me names like they have never called me names before. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I've been called lots of names before. But it was very personal. I had one person who came after me for my autism support for some of the organizations I'd supported before. Like, it was really, really nasty. And I was like, this is insane. Like, it takes a lot to upset me. But I was like, this is crazy. And so I really am careful. And this year, when I reported that the NHL had a kind of plan for looking at this, you know, the league disputed that, and some people really were upset about it. And I think it's because the league walks a real tightrope with the current women's league, the National Women's League, which is run by Danny Rillon. I think they don't want to be seen as bullies. They are worried about that if it looks like it's the big league pushing around little league, they'll be attacked. But the problem is that a lot of the players that are boycotting, they want the NHL to step in. So the NHL wants to help those players, but they don't want to interfere with that league. And it's a very, very difficult line to walk. You know, I think the NHL is trying to do as much as it can without being painted as Darth Vader. I think, Adrian, it's very, very difficult for them because they know if they're seen as bullies, they're going to get destroyed on social media for it. There's no way they'll get supported in this. That's the problem, Adrian. I think that the players who are boycotting really want the league to get involved now, and the league sits there and says, we can't do it. And I think it's a big source of frustration for everybody involved. It's a really hard story to cover because you want to be sensitive, and I want to be sensitive to the issues and the people involved, but I can honestly tell you very few things I've covered in the last 25 years that I've been in this business has the responses to anything I've written been as personal as it's been on this issue. So part of me is like, you got to make sure you're careful because some people out there are nuts.
Adrian bringing the high heat with the question this week on
Thanks a lot, Adrian.
Ask 31. All right, putting you under the heat lamp.
Yep.
The Kurt Locker, hashtag Ask 31. How would you change power plays to increase scoring? You just remove the Montreal rule and call it a day?
I would love to see that.
Full 2 minutes.
I would love to see full 2 minutes. I think the other thing, too, is while we're talking about rules changes we'd like to see, you know what I'd love to see for three-on-three overtime? Not 10 minutes, but 7. Give them 2 more minutes.
You think it would increase scoring that?
See, I don't hate the shootout as much as most people do. Like, I watched that one Arizona-Pittsburgh the other day. I think it was 8 shooters. It was pretty fun to watch. I like it being emphasized less. I think if you really wanted to make it perfect, you'd go to 7 minutes.
Do you like Berkey's idea of the shot clock?
No, I think, as usual, with most things Berkey says are completely stupid. No, I think if you go to 7 minutes, I think it's going to be tough.
From Eileen, thoughts on Dominik Kubalik? Hey, by the way, are we calling him Kubalik or Kubalik tonight?
Who's calling play-by-play tonight?
Dave Randorf.
To me, it's always Randorf's decision. What do you want to do?
Let's call Randorf.
And we go with that.
Just for this one. All right, Eileen submits. Thoughts on Dominik Kubalik?
Great story. At least putting himself into the Rookie of the Year conversation.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Kings are regretting it a bit. I got to say, just one thing about the Kings, man, they play hard.
Yeah.
They get tortured. They just, it's tough to watch. Like, you could see that game falling away from them last night against the Lightning, but I do respect how hard they play. I like Kubalik. I think he's a really talented guy that's a good find for Chicago.
So he was 7th-round pick of the Los Angeles Kings. Traded to Chicago for a 5th-round pick. So these are like throwaway trades.
Yeah.
Even in junior hockey, because I remember him, he played for the Sudbury Wolves and then briefly for the Kitchener Rangers. And he was a throw-in in a deal. Going the other way was Radek Faksa.
Really?
Now of the Dallas Stars. And he was a throw-in.
This guy's like the human throw-in.
He is, though, completely. And then went back to Czech, was scouted and found, and then when played in the Swiss League, led the league in scoring, and that was his on-ramp back to pro hockey in North America and his on-ramp into the NHL.
Good for him.
But that's the reason I do like it, because he's always been just, oh, it's just a throw-in, just a nothing. Oh, nothing's going to happen. Oh, yeah, he's a throw-in on the Faxa deal. Play 25 games, Kitchener Rangers. Oh, he's a throw-in. We got him with the 7th. Oh, we're going to pick up a 5th for it. Let's just do it. Now...
he's a player.
And playing with Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves in that game against the Ottawa Senators. On Tuesday night, periods 2 and 3, they put that line back together and boom.
Yeah, great. Like, you know, I like to hear stories like that too. I'm with you on that.
From Sean Desjardins. Given the importance of building from the draft, what are the chances that a general manager trades their first overall pick? And what do you think it would take to trade for the first overall pick? Habs fan here asking for a friend.
I don't think
you know
you're
what
going
the
to
saying is. Saying is in Montreal?
What's that?
Dernier for Lafreniere.
That's pretty funny. You could say that in Ottawa, too. They have a better chance.
Are we? Maybe two.
I don't think so. I don't think that's happening. I don't think you can count on that one.
On this one, Dale Hunter's helmet, who's the usual.
Yep.
Favorite Rush song? There was an outpouring of love, by the way. There was an outpouring of love for Neil Peart at the end of last week, the likes of which I think surprised a lot of people.
So I think our guys deserve a lot of credit. Late in the week last week, the news gets out about Neil Peart, and I think when you work at Hockey Night in Canada, we all start texting each other and saying, is there anything we can do with this? And Carson Illich has just joined our podcast. Carson, first of all, explain to the podcast audience who you are.
My name's Carson Illich. I take care of the music for Hockey Night in Canada and Sportsnet's properties.
The news comes out that Neil Peart sadly has passed away, and we want to use it for our tease opening the 7 o'clock Eastern game on Saturday night. What has to happen?
The song has to get cleared. And
so what does that mean? So for people that don't, like, basics, like from the very beginning. What does the song has to clear mean?
Every song is copyrighted. Obviously, we can't use copyrighted material without permission. So about 5 o'clock on Friday, I had to seek that permission.
So what does that mean? Like, what do you have to do?
Contact Rush's people, Rush's label, Rush's publishers. And obviously, they don't want to be contacted at that time.
Yep. Yeah.
So made for a very tricky clearance process. Ended up coming in at Friday at 11 o'clock.
How do you know that you're allowed to use a song?
I beg and beg and beg until I get a yes.
So who has to give you permission? Like, how does it work? What's officially clearance?
Well, Rush is actually convenient because all of their copyrights are owned under one house, one label. So I only had to seek one approval, but getting it at that time, given the news that just broke, was incredibly difficult. They did not want to be contacted. They asked for privacy, and I begged.
So is it clearance then for one song, part of a song, or the entire catalog?
Normally, I would go big and ask for a few more than just one, but given the time and the deadline, sure. I wanted anything. I thought we used Fly By Night. I thought that was a good one.
Yep.
That was one of the first ones that Neil wrote with the band. Got great drums in that track, and I think it came together pretty well. Sean did an awesome job. Sean Cleary, who put it together, he edited the piece with Jeff Schlegge. Very talented. Played well.
I have two last questions. Number one, who ultimately has authority to clear it to you from Rush? Like, is it a person from the label? Is it a person from the band?
There's a lot of smoke and mirrors that go on in the music industry. You never know quite who you're dealing with, but I was pretty confident that the people who gave me approval had authority to do so.
Was it Geddy Lee?
Maybe.
Really?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, that would have been unbelievable.
He's too busy watching Jays games.
Okay. And the second question I have is, and I know that these are always delicate questions, but is there a cost for this?
There would be a cost associated with that, yes.
Okay, so what would be like the most expensive song that you know we've ever paid for?
I don't know if I can get into that, but I know that there are certain bands from the 70s that are named after blimps who might not be in our budget ever, but their asks have been ridiculous.
Like, are we talking like $5,000?
Way higher.
I'm just trying to establish a number here. Like $50,000?
Well, like,
maybe,
do you want like new imaging music for headlines? Is that what
no,
you want?
I'm just curious.
You want like, Love Rain
I'm
Over Me by the Who?
I ask questions. I want to know the answer to these questions. Like 50 grand?
Well. You know, it gets past a certain point in the figure stage where I know I just have to bow out.
Hang on. Just as I just said, the Who Play Ball?
Who they're Play
good,
Ball?
They're good?
Oh, yeah.
Who are the best ones?
It's that big CSI money.
Elliot always wants, okay, who's difficult? Who are the jerks?
Who's the biggest jerk out there?
Who are the easiest guys to work with?
That's a good question. You know, you got to support Canadian music.
Yeah.
Hockey Night in Canada, we love Canadian music.
Sure.
So Canadian musicians out there, feel free to reach out. We love your stuff. Most people play ball, but the big people are difficult for a reason. They've got iconic tracks, and they don't want to let them go cheaply.
You know, the only problem is with having Carson on the podcast is
you got a better voice.
People are going to hear this voice and say, how come you're on the air and he's not?
I know. I should be up till Friday night till 11 o'clock begging labels for permission and clearance.
Yeah. Whiskey and cigars,
fly
baby.
By night. And how about Red Barchetta? Can we use Red Barchetta?
Thanks for coming on, Carson.
Thank
we really
you guys.
Appreciate it.
And Sean Cleary, Jeff Schlegge, props.
Yeah.
Good job, gentlemen. Well done. All right. From music to books, we'll finish up on this one. Luke submits, are there any new books you're planning to read this year? What were some of your favorites from the past year? Are there any books specifically about hockey analytics you would recommend? I read Gridiron Genius by Michael Lombardi. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was a good book. I'm actually taking a time out from books right now because I have a subscription to the print edition of The New Yorker. I want to read something that doesn't mean I have a screen in front of me all the time. So I'm way behind. I'm catching up on my New Yorkers, and they are heavy reads. Like, it takes a long time to read it. I'm like 3 months behind. My wife is like, when are you ever going to read these things? And I said, I'm going to ignore you, and I'm going to read those.
What was the last one you read?
The last New Yorker?
No, the last book.
The last book I read was To Catch and Kill Ronan Farrow.
How was it?
Really good.
I wish I had time.
He's a brilliant reporter, man. He is a brilliant reporter.
So you recommended MVP Machine last year, and I picked it up, and now I have, and I got this recommendation. It's for a podcast, actually. Ben Nicholson Smith. I was texting with him or emailing him with him rather about different baseball podcasts to listen to, and Ben Lindbergh is one of the co-writers of that book. I'm sure I'm way behind on all of this, like I am in most of my life, and you guys are gonna look at me and go like, "Well, welcome to, you know, 2020, Merrick." The pod he does with Meg Rowley, that Effectively Wild podcast, is awesome. That's a fantastic baseball podcast. Have you heard it?
No, I'm going to listen now.
It's good, man. Check it out.
Is Shulman doing his podcast again this year?
Well, look at that.
No, I hope he comes back.
Shifty eyes,
Dan,
from Amel.
Let me just tell you, like, Dan, like, you got unbelievable guests on that podcast. Bring that back. You put our podcast to shame. Let's go, man.
Come on, Shulman. Let's go. Chop.
Shulman, get off your butt. Like, stop being so lazy.
Yeah, it's enough. I see you on MLB Network all the time. You got time for that? You got time to do a podcast.
I got time to do a podcast.
Come on, smart guy. Anything else from the week for you, Frege, or you, do you want to be released?
Oh, yes. You know, actually, I wanted to thank somebody, and that is Kelsey Snow. So we did a piece last weekend. By the way, I have to say, last Saturday night, Chris Simpson did the Thompsons.
Nate Thompson,
Nate and Sydney Thompson. And that was a beautiful story. And Paul Sadu was the producer of that piece. And I don't know if he did this on purpose. I was wondering if it was done this way or it just worked out this way. But I thought that piece was really fascinating in the sense that when they were talking about their difficult road and before they got to him admitting he needed help, they had Nate Thompson and Sydney sitting apart. Mm-hmm. And when they talked about Post going to get help, they had them sitting together.
Nice touch.
I don't know if that was on purpose. I assume it was, but I thought that was a really good touch. But that was a beautiful piece that aired in the first intermission. And then we did the piece with Chris and Kelsey Snow, and we were looking at this and about when we could do the piece. And then Paul Grizz, who produces After Hours, suggested for January 11th game, which was the Battle of Alberta, maybe we get Chris on After Hours as the guest. And I'm like, oh, we're thinking of doing a piece, but you know, you want to be a team player and you're like, you know what? We might not be able to get the piece done in time. You should take him. You don't want to say to the rest of your show, you can't do something. You don't want to be that guy. But then I started thinking, like, what's the best way to get, they're trying to raise money for ALS funding. Mm-hmm. What's the best way to get the most eyeballs? And Scott Oak actually came up with the idea. He says, you know, there's TV shows now, like, for example, The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead, where they talk about, they do the show and then they have a conversation about it at the end. He said, what's wrong with doing a piece and then doing After Hours? And plus they air, you know, 6 hours apart. So there's prime time in the East and there's a good time in the West. And, you know, I thought it was really a wonderful thing that the people at Hockey Night in Canada above us agreed to make that work. We did the piece. And then we had them on After Hours. And the Flames were great and the Snows were great. And Chris really wanted to tell the story. But I think the person who deserves a lot of credit is his wife, Kelsey. I think, you know, Jeff, you're married. I'm married. Almost got a serious girlfriend. All of us who are lucky enough to actually convince somebody to get married to us.
Trick someone, really.
Trick someone to get married
Pulled
to
mine
us.
Mine out of a burning car.
We know how lucky we are because we're such morons and losers. Yeah. But, you know, it's always tougher on the wives. And Kelsey invited us into her home. She agreed to sit down for an interview. And I think it's always tougher on the wives. And I can't tell you how appreciative we are that she allowed us to come into her home and tell that story.
Excellent words. Outstanding.
And also, make sure you go on to the Flames website for the Snowy Strong link. If you live in Canada or you live in the United States or you want to donate directly to the Flames Foundation, there's separate links for you there.
All of our strength and support to that family. Some outstanding words there. We're going to switch it up as we say goodbye. Clément Leduc, stage name Hologram, recently released his sophomore album Felicity after his Berlin journey mixing world influences. With Doner Kebab off Felicity, here's Hologram, 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Thank you. You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.